75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone. It's St. Patrick's Day, and it's 2014 of St. Patrick's Day. He hasn't lost any appeal because they still have major parades just about everywhere. Green beer and lots of cheer. So don't drive while celebrating too much, and I think you'll be around for next week as well. That's our wish. St. Patrick's Day, 2014. I thought it would be neat if the little green men, so to speak, would land in Ireland today. But so far I've been checking sightings reports on UFOs dedicated to Ireland. And the last one I found that actually even comes close was in February, and there were two of them, as a matter of fact. One was on the 3rd. It was a place called Carlow, Ireland, and it basically was this, the standard lights in the sky, and as far as anything exciting, nothing happens other than it makes a few movements and then blinks out, regular familiar story. And then there was another one in February 20th. There was some lighting and some other things that were unusual appeared in the skies above Bangor, Northern Ireland. And in Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland, of course, is pretty famous for being rebellious, but they did report UFOs. So I think they've worked all those problems out anyway. And when we talk about their sighting, it's basically the same thing. It happened on February 20th, and not a human eye laid it, their eyes on the lights in the sky. It was actually recorded by a security camera at a motorcycle sales place in Bangor, Ireland, in their garage. Just thought I'd mention that before we get to the show, and I'm really excited about tonight's show. We have a couple of things we want to talk about tonight and feature. First is our guest, and he's got a new book out, Jim Mars. I'll tell you about it in a minute, and he'll really get into detail on it. And we're going to talk about a few other issues as well. Always love having Jim on, and he's no stranger to you folks at Inception Radio either. So Jim Mars will be here in just in a couple of minutes at the most. And then later on, we're going to give some information on Roger Lear and pay tribute to him, who evidently he passed away last Friday, according to all we can find. And so that's basically how the thing is shaping up in the world of UFOs as February, March. I always thought of that as being the end of winter, but boy, here in Texas and Oklahoma, Texas where Jim is, and Oklahoma where I am, and then, of course, Joe Champion, he's in Chicago, and he's producing this show here, and is chief executive of the Inception Radio Network. One member of the board. We'll get into the other two board members before the night's up and paid them tribute as well. But Joe says that it's snowing or has been snowing again in Chicago. Surprise? maybe not. Let's go ahead and bring Jim Mars on, and Jim's got a new book out you really need to check. It's called Did I say OU? Sorry about that, Jim. Our occult in history. And I was just telling Jim how that I've been recovering, and it doesn't sound like I've recovered, does it, Jim?
That's anyway, all right.
welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jerry, and top of the morning to you. It's St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, now we got some a little Irish stuff going. Good.
We have a little Irish green going on in Texas right now. I'm wearing a green shirt, and I just downed a harp, so, you know. Now,
yeah.
are you ready for an Irish joke?
Yes.
Well, it seems this Irishman walked out of a bar, and, no, really, Jerry, it could happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that's surprising.
Oh, I love the Irish. I think that's my ancestry. I've been told it's Scotch Irish, so.
My mother was Irish.
Yeah. So, Scotch Irish. I guess that's a miserly spendthrift.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Okay. My new book is Our Occulted History. Now, before anybody runs off thinking that I'm writing about devil worship or witches or zombies or any of the things that a lot of people associate with the occult, I need to point out that I use the term occulted in the astronomical sense, okay? When the moon eclipses the sun, that's called an occultation, okay? The moon occults the sun, and it simply means mask or hidden, okay? Because it covers the sun, so it hides it. And so, actually, this is simply our hidden history. This is history that you're never taught in school, and most people are unaware of, and yet it actually points to our true origins. And people may say, well, who cares what happened thousands or millions of years ago? Well, because if you don't have an accurate picture of where you're coming from, then you're never going to be able to figure out where you're going. Right, Jerry?
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. This book has an interesting subtitle, too, about the global elite concealing ancient astronauts.
Right.
And
well,
so we'll get into all that. Maybe you'd like to expand on that right now and tell me a little bit about how ancient are these astronauts? Do they go back to the beginning?
Well, they're pretty ancient because they go back all through our history. There, if you go back and study the indigenous primitive peoples of the planet, all the way from the ancient Chinese to the ancient Hindus to the ancient Sumerians, to the ancient Egyptians, to the Aborigines, to the Dogon tribe in Africa, and even to some of the creation tales of the Native Americans, they all carry certain similar themes. And these themes are that beings came from the heavens and were able to fly through the air and then came and taught them things about like how to grow crops, how to make things. Being one of those who likes my beer, I was interested years ago to figure out where exactly did beer come from. And, you know, wine, that's a no-brainer. I can figure that one out. You know, you got a caveman, it's a hot day, he's thirsty and hot, and he looks down, he finds some grapes on the ground, and they've been laying there for a while, they got fermented. And so he eats those and gets a little high and decides, hey, that's great. And so begins the wine industry. Now, okay, no problem there. But beer, wait a minute. You've got to have just the right proportions of hops and malts and barley, and they got to be mixed in the right proportions. And then you have to add sugars, and then you have to let it sit and ferment for a certain length of time. And you got to go through all this procedure, this formula, before you can make beer. So now who in the world figured that out? Well, the truth is, nobody knows. When I went on the internet and I went to the library and tried to study out where beer came from, it's basically nobody knows. But I might point out that among the most ancient writings known to man, which would be the cuneiform tablets of the Sumer civilization there in Mesopotamia between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which is now modern-day Iraq, they noted that these ancient Sumerians, which predate the Egyptians by several thousand years, they had at least four kinds of beer. Well, wait a minute. How did they learn how to do that? Well, they wrote down on those tablets, many of which still exist, that the Anunnaki told them how to make beer. Well, who were the Anunnaki? Well, according to the translations, the Anunnaki means those who came from the heavens and landed on the earth. So we've got this whole background, this whole concept of ancient astronauts, you know, which used to be scoffed at quite largely, and is still scoffed at by a large percentage of the population. But that scoffing is growing thinner and quieter because, especially after the success of the History Channel's series called Ancient Aliens. And the evidence is certainly almost overwhelming. It's certainly credible, but it's almost overwhelming. And, for example, let me point this out to you, Jerry. In the ancient Sumerian tablets, they said that millions of years ago, they talk about the formation of our solar system in mythological terms. And it seems that at one point, there was the Sun, Mercury, Venus, and then Mars. And then, outside of Mars, was a very large planet that they called Tiamat. And Tiamat was about four times the size of Earth, and was largely a watery world. But millions of years ago, another body, they call it a planet, the planet of crossing, which is Nibiru. Nibiru comes through. It's on an elliptical orbit, so it carries it on its farthest apogee. It goes way out past our solar system and then comes back in, and it makes an orbit every 3,600 years. And so, of course, there have been all kinds of stories in all kinds of publications. As recently as 2013, the Huffington Post reported that a new moon of Neptune is discovered. It goes all the way back into the 80s, where they said Planet X clues are getting warmer for Planet X. And so they know that the outer planets, that there are perturbations in their orbits, which means there's some other body out there that gravitationally is impacting on these outer planets. And there's some supposition that it's Nibiru and that it's actually coming around again, although if you count out back the 3,600 years, it's probably not actually due to be near the Earth until about 2060. But still, we're close enough to that it may be coming in this way. In fact, there are those who argue that this is what's causing this sudden rash of sunspot activity and comets and meteors coming into the Earth, and like the one that went into Russia here a few months back. And because this body is approaching the Oort cloud, and it's pushing these asteroids and these bodies into the solar system. But anyway, back to the Sumerian story, they said that one of the moons of Nibiru, millions of years ago, as it was coming through our solar system, struck the planet Tiamat. And it demolished half the planet and just broke it into bits and to rubble. But this rubble stayed in the same orbit where Tiamat had been. And this is what we know as the asteroid belt. And I find this really interesting because when I was like, I don't know, grade school or junior high school, and we learned about the asteroid belt, even as a kid, my first thought was, well, that's a planet that blew up, you know, and it's still...
Yeah, I had the same thought.
yeah. Okay, so then, but then the odd part of the story is the other half of Tiamat coalesced and was knocked past the orbit of Mars and went into orbit on the sun side of Mars and became the Earth. And this is where the Earth came from. And of course, we know that about two-thirds of the Earth is just a big empty water-filled hole, which is known as the Pacific Ocean. And of course, people would laugh at this and say, oh, no, you know, life didn't begin on Mars or Tiamat. But yet, as science goes along, we're finding more and more. Space.com was reported on CBS News in August of just last year, saying that evidence is building that Earth life originated on Mars and was brought to this planet aboard a meteorite, said biochemist Stephen Benner of the Westheimer Institute for Science and Technology in Florida. So science is beginning to catch up with what we all thought were just ancient mythologies. So it may behoove us to pay attention to what these ancients were writing and saying, because up until now, the scientific community has scoffed at all of this and said that all the stories, for example, that are in these existing tablets, is just mythology. And yet, what they're finding out is more and more that their so-called mythology may be the fact that those ancient people were actually telling us what they knew to be the truth. The problem was we could not interpret it correctly. For example, up until the mid-1800s, most people did not even know about the civilization of Sumer. In fact, I know when I was in school, as I recall, I was taught that the Egyptians were the first great civilization in man's history. Well, now we know that the Sumerians predated the Egyptians by thousands of years. And in fact, some of the Bible's accounts, such as the story of Moses in the bulrushes and the story of Noah and the great flood, these are stories that were actually told by the Sumerian thousands of years before the Bible was ever written down. And it just got transposed into other languages and names changed, but the story was the same. And again, we're back to the fact that these Sumerians said that these Anunnaki, these people who came from the stars, came here and colonized. And so it's really amazing, but we're more and more catching up with that. In the mid-1800s, when they began to translate the Sumerian tablets, and they read about these Anunnaki who could fly through the air and had weapons of mass destruction that could devastate whole cities with one explosion, and the fact that they were able to do genetic manipulation and cloning, etc. This was back in the mid-1800s. We did not know about the atom. We did not know about space flight. In fact, the prevalent idea in science was that man could never have heavier-than-air flight. In fact, Jerry, I don't know if you knew this, but to me this is really amazing, but it was more than a year after the Wright brothers flew Kitty Hawk in 1906 that the New York Times finally got around to publishing a story about it, because at the time they had reporters there. And they had people coming in and telling them the Wright brothers flew at Kitty Hawk. But their science people said, no, that's impossible. So they wouldn't publish the story. It was only a year later, after the Wright brothers were invited to France and went over to Europe and demonstrated their flying machine, and the European media began to report on it, that the New York Times, our newspaper of record, finally got around to covering this historic event.
I didn't realize that, Jim. That's a pretty interesting fact.
So there's stuff going on right now that's not yet reported on.
Yeah. Now, what I was going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that just shows once again that the media hasn't changed in forever, really.
That's true.
The same things today.
Well, and today you got added problems. Back then, libel suits were not unheard of, but they were very few and far between. And most printers also published newspapers, and they'd publish whatever they wanted to. And you got everything from fictional stories to fictional news to humor and sarcasm and lampoons and everything else. But today, as you well are aware, Jerry, the news purveyors today, whether it be newspaper, radio, or television, they're so afraid of, number one, losing an advertiser, number two, hacking, making an advertiser mad, number three, getting involved in some kind of libel suit, that they're so skittish, they hardly will publish anything unless it comes from the government-approved news. And as a result, we are not usually told everything we need to be told about.
Yeah, and that brings me up to the missing airplane, which I'll talk to you before the show's over. But let's talk a little bit more about ancient astronauts and your book. It's called Our Occulted History.
Mm-hmm. And, well, the evidence for ancient astronauts, as I said before, is quite compelling. In fact, almost overwhelming. In my book, Our Occulted History, I move on from these early tales. In fact, most of what we think we know, we don't know. There was a Scientific American cover story in 2011 that said there were quantum gaps in the Big Bang theory. Why our best explanation of how the universe evolved must be fixed or replaced. So in other words, everything, you know, we're all taught, oh, the Big Bang, well, that's what happened. And now even the scientists themselves are going, well, maybe that's not exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And then when we look around at a bunch of the so-called anomalies, that's a scientific anomaly is just a WTF, right? And they don't really know, but there's so many things going on. Like in our own solar system right now, a lot of people have never heard of Iapetus, which is one of the moons of Jupiter, and it's an amazing thing. I meant Saturn. It's one of the moons of Saturn, and like our own moon, it's in a near perfect circular orbit, and it has one side is stationary, in that one side always faces Saturn. And when you see pictures of this thing, it looks like the Death Star in Star Wars. It's got a huge big crater up on one end, and it's got a ridge, which I guess is a ridge of mountains, or some kind of a seal, circling it right at the equator. It's really an amazing thing. And then not only that, but when it's got a dark side and a light side, and when it gets in the right position, it makes the symbol of the yin yang, the Chinese symbol indicated the opposites, light and dark, and it's got a convoluted shadow, and that's why it's been called the yin yang moon. So we just got all this strange stuff, not to mention stuff on our own moon. Like the shard, which is some kind of an object that sticks more than a mile off the surface of the moon. We've got NASA photographs showing strange objects moving across the face of the moon or parked sticking out over the edge of a crater. Or there are tracks that come out of craters and then roll across the surface. And one would be inclined to say, I'm sure, with, you know, conventional thought would be, well, that was just a kind of a round boulder that rolled down the side of a crater and rolled out into the plain, which would be great, except in some of the photographs, the tracks come up the inside of the crater, which, you know, makes no sense if it's a natural object. So we just have, in fact, Jerry, we even have questions about our own moon, and none the least of which is, how did it get where it is? Okay. When I was in school, we were told that the moon tore away from the Earth. And but then now, since we've been to the moon, we know that the composition of moon rocks is totally different from the composition of rocks on Earth. And so we also know that there have been rocks on the moon found that predate the formation of the Earth. They're older than the Earth. So we have to come up with another idea. And so the latest idea is that the moon came from outside and was captured by the gravitational field of the Earth and pulled into orbit around the Earth. Well, if that's the case, you would expect to have kind of an elliptical orbit. I mean, it comes past the Earth, it's caught in the gravitational pull, it's pulled back, and then it's pulled back again. So you ought to have an elliptical orbit, and it ought to be pretty wobbly, since it's been determined by NASA that the center of gravity of our moon is not in the precise center of the moon. It's off by a couple of miles. And so if you've got a ball in the center of gravity, in the center of the ball is off center, and you try to roll it along the floor, it's not going to roll a straight line. It's going to wobble all over the place. And yet our moon is in a near-perfect circular orbit right around the equator of the Earth, with one side always facing the Earth. Even the famous scientist Isaac Asimov said the moon shouldn't be where it is. But it is, which means probably the only logical explanation is that some sort of intelligence parked it there. And yet,
so,
here's our
are you saying it captured it someplace and brought it here and parked it there? Did they use it as an observatory or a stepping off place to get to Earth? Or why did they do that, I wonder?
Well, that's a good question. But apparently, that's the only thing that explains the anomalies of how the moon can be in the orbit that it's in. But here's our circular thinking. Jerry, we all know there's no such thing as aliens, and we also know that the moon's been with us since the earliest writings of mankind, and we know that we didn't park it up there, so let's just not talk about it.
Well, you know, we're laughing about Jim Mars, but... That's pretty common in science and several things, even the media. They don't have an answer. They just let it go, and let's not keep it in the headlines too long, okay, and pass
right
on.
Let's don't think about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird, but I love to think about things like that.
I do, too.
Why are these things like this? What's going on here?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I always look forward to having you on the air. Is that you look at angles that you know, most people don't think about.
Most people aren't even aware those angles are there.
Yeah, right. And so it's always an educational experience having you on. We're talking with Jim Mars, and he has a new book out called Our Occulted History, and we're talking about the occulted history is not talking about the occult as in paranormal, but something else entirely. And we'll continue with Jim and find out a little bit more about that. Jim, this is off the subject, but we'll get back to yours in a minute and the fascinating things we've been talking about. But that's one thing I never really thought would catch on, and it's really gangbusters, and that's listening to radio shows on cell phones.
Hmm.
It's amazing. It's really coming around. It's I don't do it too much, but I just know the numbers of the people who do listen to us on a cell phone.
Well,
the media is changing constantly.
That is true, and it's kind of amazing to me, although it shouldn't be surprising. I mean, ever since they've come out with these portable tape recorders and then portable CD players, and now these players with just, you know, massive amounts of information that can be put on a chip, I know so many people who, like when they're commuting, and let's face it, due to overcrowding and traffic jams and everything else, commuting has become a real chore. You know, it's not just 10 minutes to work. Sometimes it's an hour or more, and a lot of times just inching along in traffic. And so there's a lot of folks, obviously, who are listening to all kinds of things. They used to just listen to the radio, but I know there's a lot of them now that don't want to hear commercials, and they enjoy talk radio. And they're listening to the talk shows. And now, because we have all these devices, computers and iPhones and everything else, they can tape or record, you know, a late night program. They could record your program right now. For instance, if they had something to do on a Monday night and then listen to you during the week on their way to work or while they're traveling. It really is. It's opened up a whole new vista for people for information sharing.
Yeah, and as you know, we started early on with the on-demand programming because it just made sense to me. The technology was there that, instead of having to listen live at a certain time, they could download it. And when I came up with our plans, we started putting shows out on demand a long, long time ago, and that's before really the technology had made it as
right.
convenient as
yeah,
it
you're
now.
Kind of a pioneer in that, weren't you?
Yeah, and we, it's just it's a natural progression of things.